Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to the Labrish. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, and this segment is the Backyard Labrish. We gather in the backyard each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we take a virtual trip to Jamaica, land we love. And when we do so, we select our favorite easy chair in the location that will just put a smile on our face and relax our entire bodies, because that's what Jamaica can do to you, just put you in a very relaxed mood. So we're going to take a virtual trip this evening, as we usually do. And I ask you to just leave all your cares and worries behind. As we say on the island, no problem, man. So just forget about all your problems and just chill. And for those of you who may come by later to listen to our show, if you're not able to chill while you're listening to it, still pretend you're there, because it will do a lot for you. So, if you have been following us, you know that we're sort of tracing the mix, the true meaning of our motto, out of many, one people. And I don't know about the rest of the listeners, but I have just been learning so much about how the pot got mixed up. And it's so interesting. And I hope that the listeners are finding it interesting, too. So let me just give you a little recap for those who might not have caught up with the first couple of shows to tell you where we are now. But we talked about the arrival. Let's talk about the ones who came first, which would be the Africans. And that happened about 1513. And just so you know, they were there at first as cowboys and hunters, and they were brought there by the Spanish. They were taken from Spain and Portugal. So we know they were cowboys, herders, and hunters, and servants. So next came the Jews in 1530. Incidentally, the Africans were there 142 years before the British took over, so that's a long time. Anyway, I would just like to tell you now that the Jews came in 1530, the first set. And, of course, we know that they were the first retailers. The Indians came in 1845. And if you all remember that week, we talk about what they brought was the rice and the ganja. And the Chinese came in 1854, and everybody contributed something to the cultural mix, of course. But they were the first ones to extend credit because they would import stuff in large quantities and then prepackage it for the people who didn't need or could afford buying in large amounts. So that's just to give you a little recap of what happened before. So this evening, we're going to talk about the arrival of the Lebanese. And I would like to tell everyone that the information I am sharing is on Pieces of the Past, and these are wonderful articles that were put together by Dr. Rebecca Tortello. So I'm giving her credit, and I am so grateful that she did all of this research so we could have documented information that I can share. And I just consider myself giving voice to what she wrote. And I never read it word for word. You know, I have to put in my two cents. And I invite anyone that is listening online to join me in the Labrish, because as you know, if you're a fan, you know what a Labrish is all about. So it's getting together to discuss. And here in the backyard, we talk about things that celebrate and preserve Jamaican's culture. So that's what the show is all about. So let me just share with you what Dr. Tortella has to say about the arrival of the Lebanese. And the beginnings. The story of the Lebanese in Jamaica began towards the end of the 19th century. Unlike their fellow immigrants from China and India, who had begun arriving in Jamaica in the mid-19th century, the Lebanese did not land on the island as indentured laborers. They, like the Jews that had come centuries before, arrived by their own free will, albeit fleeing religious persecution. And as I say that, it just comes to mind, as I always share, how much have changed in technology and just progress on a whole, but how much is still the same in certain things. Because as we speak, there is religious persecution going on all over the world and still in that region of the world. I think it was just a couple of days ago, I read in Egypt, I think it was, that a church was burnt and there was, you know, unrest between the Muslims and the Christians. And as I researched the paper, I said, oh my goodness, we haven't changed much, have we? So let me go back to the article. And again, listeners on the board, please feel free to put in your two cents too. Most of those that fled were Christians who suffered religious persecution at the hands of the Muslim Turks, who controlled most of the area under the Ottoman Empire. At the time, that region of the Middle East contained people from an area known as Mount Lebanon, which was then part of Syria. Hence the common confusion between the term Syrian and Lebanese and why they tend to be used interchangeably. Having heard of the wonders of the New World, a place where the streets were supposedly paved with gold, that there were there for the taking, provided one worked hard enough, many sought to escape as quickly as possible and build new lives for themselves and their families. So we know now the reason they came. But what was intriguing to me is how people still think of other places, especially here in the United States, as being paved with gold. But I suppose, you know, when you are being persecuted or harassed or whatever, to get away and be in a place where you can be free is, I suppose, as good as gold. So, why Jamaica? There are a few theories put forth as to why Jamaica was chosen as a destination. Nelly Amar, the daughter of one of the earliest Lebanese immigrants and matriarch of the well-known Amar Retail family, collected stories from many of her relatives and friends prior to her own passing in the late 1990s. In an article for the Jamaican Journal, she referenced her father, who explained that for many who left the Middle East in the 1860s and 1870s, Britain was seen as the country of freedom. America was still emerging from its own bloody civil war. Therefore, according to him, the earliest Lebanese / Syrian immigrants seem to have decided to seek the protection of the British flag wherever they could find it, and Jamaica fell into that category. He went on to explain that many of those who came later were joining relatives and friends rather than striking out for entirely new territory. This is known as chain migration, where prospective immigrants hear success stories and are provided with passage and a job on arrival through family or other social connections. Other destinations of early immigrants told Amar that their relatives came because Jamaica was where their ships first landed. And since many who bought their passages in the Middle East had no clear idea where they were going, they simply disembarked. Still, others explained that their family members spoke of first landing in Cuba after having left the Middle East and stopping in the French port of Marseilles or some Italian port. They didn't like Cuba and so came across to Jamaica. Now, that brings me to another sidebar. I mean, I think chain migration is still going on, because when we have relatives in a particular area or place and we want to go somewhere and branch out from wherever we are, whether it's within the same city or in a foreign country, we go to be with the people we know and, you know, can really associate with. So it's going on today. Interesting. Back to the article. In addition, stories recount that many Lebanese / Syrians first heard of Jamaica as a result of the Great Exhibition of 1891. The exhibition held on the grounds of what is now Woolmer School drew over 300,000 visitors from around the world, including some from the Middle East. They spoke of opportunities in Jamaica, and soon Middle Easterners from Lebanon and Palestine, such as noted father of Jamaica tourism, Abe Issa's grandfather, his grandfather and father decided to journey to Jamaica and try their luck at selling dry goods. Now, if there are Jamaicans on the board, I am sure they can relate to those names and also those industries, because in my time, we could relate those names to the different industries as we speak of the different people who came to Jamaica at different periods. It's just so interesting. And again, I want to remind our listeners who may come by later that you are listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And this series is sort of researching and enlightening, hopefully, the Jamaican, the true Jamaican diverse culture. So feel free, call us on the board to hit 1 on your telephone. That will tell me that you want to join the Labrish, and I'll open up the mic to you. So, you know, I need some feedback. So let me know if you're enjoying the show. I get quite a few emails telling me that, you know, people would never know this. They're glad they're learning it. And I most of the times I tell my listeners that I'm really doing this show because I want my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren to have some history, because people are getting so busy now. I know when I was growing up, I didn't have time to listen to my mother and whatever she needed to tell me about when she was growing up. Seems like I wish now that I'd taken more time to investigate and find out, because I don't know about anybody else, but I find that the older I get is the more interested I get in knowing what happened, you know, many, many moons ago. So I'm hoping, I know that the future generation will not be reading anything on paper, on print, but they'll perhaps be reading it in cyberspace on their different gadgets that they read things on now. But anyway, it's always easier to listen for some people than to do the reading themselves. So I hope that the listeners will enjoy my going over Dr. Tortella's papers. And I really encourage you to get it right. You need to go to Pieces of the Past, and that's published by the Jamaican newspaper, I believe. And there's also a book out that you can get on Amazon that is the title, Jamaica, Pieces of the Past. Now, let's go back to the story. On landing in Kingston, new arrivals in the 1890s often encountered a full harbor and a vibrant market scene. Laborers in distinctive jippy-jappa hats, businessmen in coats, morning coats, and East Indians in their regalia, all haggling over prices, Finely dressed women abounded. Single and double horse-drawn traps recruited passengers, while mule-drawn tram cars, offered alternate means of transportation. Even though they had to jump over open drains, there was electricity and portable piped water. The city was booming. There were good reasons to believe that a peddler would do well. And Dr. Tortella quotes, you know, where she gets all this information. So the quote is there. It's a 1994, page 5. So if there are people who want to do a special paper on Jamaican history, really they can get a lot of information that is verified from these articles. So let me go back to the article here. Now, earlier Lebanese/Syrian immigrants seem to have been active in the banana industry, But faced with its decline in the beginning of the 20th century, most turned to buying and selling, and eventually to retail, following members of the Jamaican Jewish community. At first, very few had enough money to buy shops, so they turned to peddling. And then she quotes where she got that information from. Now, I don't know about anybody on the board, but I remember that in the old days, and, you know, I go back really old days, there was always a merchant on his bicycle that would ride and drop things off that people, you know, like whatever they were needed to buy. People didn't go to the store much to buy certain things in the old days. I remember that. Perhaps things for the bedroom and curtains and things of that sort, because in the 30s and 40s, that's the way it was done. Although there were stores, but I mean that kind of trade was going on, was a very brisk trade at the time. Now I'm asking members on the board. I see we have callers in from 973-718-404-301. So feel free to hit one on your telephone if you want to join the Labrish. So back to Dr. Tortella's article here. And again, I just want to say, you know, how really, I am just really, really thrilled that the historians took the time to really preserve some of this history, because it's hard to find it anywhere else. I know there are a couple of books, quite a few books that are available, but it's not everybody that knows about them. And I think a lot of this information is really relevant to the next generation, so they can have a little feel about the way their forefathers, you know, grew up and where we grew up. And as I go over these articles and I think of how when I was growing up in Jamaica, regardless of the ethnic background, everybody were just Jamaicans. I mean, they might do different things and live in different parts of the island, but I don't think anybody felt any different. And I thought, what a great example we were for the rest of the world. Because here it was in all these early times when the people who had free will and could perhaps pay their passage someplace. Some people came there because of a different need. Some people came there against their will. But everybody eventually merged into one, live peacefully. You know, every country within its borders have problems. I'm not talking about that. But I don't remember so much division, or any division really, between the religions. You know, people, there were so many different types of religions when I was growing up, but there were not to the point where they were hating each other or fighting each other, or it didn't matter. It didn't matter whether you were Catholic or, you know, Pentecostal or Pocomania or whatever. But I don't remember any kind of hostility, really, where that was concerned. But then I'm old. I don't know if I'm remembering right. So if there's anyone on the board that want to weigh in on this and have a better memory, I would appreciate it. So since there are no hands, I'm going back to the article. So Dr. Tortello goes on to say that... Okay, I've lost my plate. Oh, I found it. A potential peddler would locate an area, ascertain the possibilities, borrow money from a more established member of the Lebanese Syrian community, purchase a small amount of goods, and sell them door to door. As business improved, the peddler might expand to add first a donkey to his setup, and then as it expanded further, a horse and buggy, and eventually a motor vehicle. Customers appreciated the convenience of being able to shop from home, even though they had limited choice. And she quoted where she documented that from again. Once the peddler amassed enough funds, he would open what is called a dry goods shop, many of which were and still are located in downtown Kingston on Orange, King, and West Queen and Harbor Streets. Issa's, Joseph's, Shukir's, Hannah's, Bardowell's, and many families, example, Siaga and Sons. So Jamaicans are very familiar with those names, I am sure. Now, many amongst the first wave of immigrants worshipped in the Greek Orthodox Church, but found none on arrival in Jamaica, and so turned to the Anglican and Roman Catholic churches. The first of many adaptations that included the learning of a new language and intermingling with Jamaican society, whose own culture modes were being formed as different groups, the Chinese, Indians, Africans, and Europeans, struggled to make the island their home. So what I understand from that paragraph, really, is like anything else or anywhere else, I'm sure it wasn't easy at first for everybody to get acclimated. They didn't speak the same language, have the same culture, or even had the place of worship they were accustomed to on the island. But isn't it wonderful how, that's why perhaps we can, as my mother used to say, we can make fashion. You know, you use one thing and make something else. You adapt. I think that a lot of my generation and how I grew up, a lot of what we learned, or I know what I learned, is that you can adapt to anything if you really want to. So back to the art, that was my sidebar again. Some Lebanese immigrants, such as those from the village of Sarawat, did speak English as it had been taught in school, their region of the Middle East. This certainly made it easier for them to adjust than other immigrants and assisted their assimilation into Jamaican society. Others, especially those later arrivals that landed between the two world wars to join their family members, spoke French, so it took them longer to adjust to both the Queen's English and the Jamaican English. So there again, and she's strictly talking about the Syrians/Lebanese in this particular article. So the later ones came from a region where they spoke French, so it took them longer. Now, as time passed, many Lebanese Syrians achieved success in business. They were careful with their money and worked hard. Fewer and fewer returned to Lebanon. In fact, many of the second-generation Lebanese Jamaicans did not return to Lebanon to find wives and retain aspects of their culture, as had been the custom of some of their parents. World War II interrupted this tradition. Second and third generation Lebanese Jamaicans therefore became more Jamaicanized. So there we learn that up to a certain time, they were going back to their original countries to select a mate. It didn't say husbands here. It said to find wives. So I suppose only the men went to find wives. But that changed when it was hard, I suppose, to travel because of the war. Now, as I'm saying these things, I want to just make another point that I try to talk about to my listeners, and that is the importance of documenting your family history. What I'm doing here on this station, this broadcast, is to try to leave some spoken word about in one place about the generation that I grew up in, and I invite listeners that have a story that they'd like to share to just let me know. I'd love to feature you or a member of your family or a friend that you may know who want to leave something for the rest of the world to know about the Jamaican culture. And as I always say, you know, the show's not about politics, who's right, who's wrong, or, you know, anything of that kind. It's more to leave something valuable for the next generation and even the current generation, because I believe that a lot of the younger Jamaicans or Jamericans might not know a lot about history as it was. I mean, I know I did not know half of what I've discovered, or not much at all, about what I've been discovering as I go over these historical documents. So I am really getting an education that I absolutely love. Because I am retired, I've taken the time to do the research and share it on the show. And I know that it's being appreciated because I get email, and I can tell because the radio station keeps track of how many times the shows were listened to. And with that said, I'd just like to tell you that all the shows are archived. We've been doing it for about 2.5 years. And every show that was ever recorded is on the website. If you are online, you have access to all of them. And they're all listed by the month, not in categories, but by the month. So if you just click on any month, you will see a drop-down menu with all the different shows that we have done, and you can listen to any of them that you may be interested in. You could also forward that link for that particular show to someone who you believe may have a similar interest in that subject. So we try to share information that is relevant and authentic, and I'm grateful to the historians who are providing me with the material. And, of course, you can go right to the site that these are. I get everything from the Internet. But I also am interested in personal stories and people who would like to share something, as long as it celebrates and really, for historical reasons, preserve what we want to preserve. So hopefully listening will find it interesting, and keep me posted as to what you'd like to hear. I am going to continue the series on the different ethnic backgrounds that choose one way or another to come to Jamaica or landed there one way or another. We still have a bunch to go, believe it or not. Our motto that says, out of many, one people, is really, really, truly deep and rich. And I have just gone over, 5 different ethnic backgrounds. And there's still quite a few more to go. So for those of you who know, we're a very small island, but there's so many lessons that we can learn from our history, and hopefully the younger generation will take pride in who they are and why we are who we are. Because if you really think about it, we really absorbed each things from each other, and it blended so well. I don't know if there's another place on the map that perhaps had such a rich history as we do. And perhaps there is. I'm limited in where I know about. I chose to do this research because I just love Jamaica, even though I may not be there or ever go back to live there. But I'm still so grateful that I was born there and raised there that, you know, that's something that I will always celebrate. So let me share with you now what Dr. Tortello has to say in her final chapters. As time passed, I read that already, contributions to Jamaican life. The Lebanese introduced the popular flat bread known as Syrian bread, a staple for their diet, to Jamaican cuisine. They gave the island a beautiful queen, former Miss Jamaica and Miss World, Lisa Hannah Panton. She's part Lebanese. Names like Hannah, Mahfoud, Issa, Joseph, Amar, Azan, Shakir, Karam, and it goes on and on and on. Matalon, Zaidi, they are all well-known names in Jamaica. Zaidi, most of these names are giants of retail, tourism, horse racing, industry, and manufacturing. Last but not least, perhaps the most famous Jamaican with Lebanese descendants is the Most Honorable Edward Seaga, the country's longest-serving Minister of Parliament, current leader of the Jamaican Labor Party and former Prime Minister. His contributions to national, economic, social, and cultural development are legends. Now, she also has a little history of Lebanon. Today's Lebanon has been independent for close to 60 years. I'm not sure when this article was written. Now, between the two world wars, it was French colony. It was a French colony for almost 400 years prior to the 1920s. The land where Lebanon now is fell under the rule of the Ottoman Turkish Empire. So they had a few different governments. So all along we can see how politics and religion have, you know, caused conflict all over the world. So with that said, again, I'm going to ask if there are any callers on the board that want to wave in. My, how time goes by, because I've been out talking for almost an hour, and I don't see any hands going up. So if I don't see a hand shortly, I am going to be bidding you good night, because I don't know about you all, but I have just had a lot of fun. And most times I must confess that although I might scan the document that I'm going to do for the week, and I make a promotional little something that I send out to people on my list, I don't really read the article in details. So this gives me a chance to really read the article, and a lot of times I really get so emotional because it's so meaningful to me, even at my age, to be learning something new. And I can almost feel the connection because some of the things make sense. And I have an ah moment, you know, and I see a hand going up at 718-379. So I'm going to open up the mic. Good evening. This is Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
You got Lay in the backyard in the Bronx.
Great. Well, I hope you're in your favorite chair and you can feel the trade winds drifting softly across your face.
Not only that, but I just had a glass of coconut water and a piece of potato pudding. Typical.
Well, lucky you. You didn't have a little white rum in it, did you?
Pardon?
Did you have a little white rum in it?
Not really.
Okay. I was just kidding.
I was satisfied with that typical Jamaican fare as a dessert.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
welcome
to
the back.
Yes. The Lebanese, as you pointed out, came because they were after some new spoils in the New World.
Yeah.
And
it was paved with gold, wasn't it?
Yeah. And a lot of them really didn't have all that money, but by the time they got to Jamaica, they found a need for doing the shops where they would sell dry goods, or if they didn't have it, they would order it for you. And that would, but a lot of them came and they were attracted by what we would call here a World's Fair in Jamaica. They had this great exhibition in 1891, and that attracted over 300,000 people to Jamaica, from people from all over the world. And this exhibition was held in the area that we know as the Woolmer's Schools. And as a result of that, a lot of people thought Jamaica was a great place to come and set up shop.
Right.
And hence, you had a lot of these people from the so-called Ottoman Empire, who happened to be Lebanese. The Ottoman Empire had about 29 provinces, of which Syria and Lebanon were parts of these provinces. So, you know, they came from that region. Ottoman Empire was a huge territorial expansion of it was almost like the Russia of today. Russia comprises of a wide area, and in the period we're talking about, like from 1516 to 1521, the Ottoman Turkish Empire was held this way.
So Ottoman was a family? I mean, it was like a dictatorship?
It was a grouping of different...
Religious or what?
No, it wasn't. It was mostly, like you were alluded to before, a Muslim sort of. It wasn't Christian.
It had to do with a set of people believing the same things, and they were the ruling party, or they were the majority then. Let's call it the majority. Because I couldn't relate to what the Ottoman thing was.
Yeah, better to call it like a majority, because it comprises of Turkey and Lebanon and a lot of different places. The names have changed now because it was like these different rulers fought each other to gain territory and
right.
then wipe out other people's territory. So it's happening.
Well, the same thing is happening now.
Now
it's amazing.
Yeah,
in the same region, I'm sure there are people, refugees, trying to get away, and they're perhaps persecuted because of their Christians or Muslims or whatever. But so much have not changed.
Christians are having a really hard time nowadays. So the point, though, is that these people, that the people from that region, Lebanon and Syria, were Christians that were coming to Jamaica.
Right. Huh?
Much like the Jews were coming because they were not Christians, you know?
Right, yes. I mean, isn't it amazing? And both of them landed in the same place, which I thought was ironic because, you know, everybody, at least I know of in my day and my mother's day, coexisted peacefully.
Yeah. Well, they
worshipped in whatever way they wanted to, even though originally, you know, it was different, all different sets of people coming into a new place.
Yes, and Jamaica was flying a British flag.
Right.
At
the time,
freedom.
When the Jews came, when the original Jews came, it was under Spanish, though, and the original Africans.
That was in a slightly different time period here.
Right.
So that they thought they would get a fairer shake under a British system, especially if they're Christians, in Jamaica. So they came and set up shop, and most of them never went back to where they came, of course. And other people said, hey, they stayed, it must be great. So they, from the same area, other people came for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a vibrant Lebanese community in Jamaica. I know in my school, I can remember a lot of these names, Azan, Haddad, Hannah, Issa, Malik.
Mm-hmm.
Several of those guys, well, Mahfoud went to Jamaica College, but Kuri, I have friends who are Kuri, Shukair, Mazukas, they all were Catholics eventually and came to the school that I went.
Mm.
Of course, those guys by then, which they were second and third generation, we're driving up to school in limousines.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, it talked about them, you know, really being frugal with their money.
Yep.
And so many of the early Jamaicans were frugal with their money. And, you know, built from nothing, really.
Right.
So it's really quite interesting how people came there with nothing, just like how people have to leave a certain part of where they perhaps were born and raised and where their forefathers came from and go to an entirely different part of the world, and they get acclimated and they become successful. So, you know, it's happening all over. So a lot of things have not changed. You have foreigners who, you know, go to different parts of the world and just bloom and blossom. So I just find all of this really very interesting and intriguing when you think of it in as far as humanity is concerned, you know, of who we are as a people on the planet. Because the bottom line is, we're all occupying the planet. We're all occupying the planet, you know. So it's really just strange how, as I think, a lot have changed and a lot have not.
Right.
And I don't suppose it will ever change unless we change our thinking. We as humans is what I mean.
As we like to say, history repeats itself in countless.
Right. That is so true. So true.
You know.
And unlike the rest of nature that cannot think and change, you know, a goat can be a cow, and an acorn cannot be a rose. So, but we have the ability to change and adapt. And if I leave nothing with my listeners, I just want to read that little nugget for us all to really, you know, get in our consciousness that we're all here together and we need to find a way to exist peacefully.
Out of many.
Thrive. Pardon?
Out of many.
That's right. I think Jamaica can be an example for so many other places in the world because I don't know about the rest of the islands, you know, like the other islands that were similar to Jamaica. But I can just say that I think that we just did great. I think we really, really did great because, you know, it's really out of many one people. So with that said, Leigh, as usual, I thank you for being such a great fan and supporting me each week. I really appreciate that. And I'm sure the other listeners appreciate hearing you too. And I wish that more people would interact, but I know they're listening. I see them on the board. And they're here with us for the duration of the show. So I appreciate each of you and hope that you will come back often and that you will also share the show with some of your friends who might not be on the list, but you can share it with them in different ways. So with that said, Mr. Leigh from the Bronx, I want to thank you again and hope to hear you next week.
Hopefully.
All right.
Yep.
And we will be doing another ethnic background next week. We have about three more to do. So yeah. We have a lot of mix-up. And everyone has something specific and special that was contributed to our wonderful Jamaican culture. So I can't wait to share it with the rest of the world. So good night.
Good night from the Bronx.
From the Bronx. Good night.
Good night.
And I want to say good night and thanks to the rest of the listeners and to challenge you to make it a great week. See you next week. Bye.